Yo, podcast listeners, today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Clean Cut Meals. The yo is in reference to my Instagram story, so if you are on my Instagram, that will make sense. Clean Cut Meals offer a professional meal prep service and have various plans to suit your specific goals. They also change up their menus every week so you never get bored and can help you stay on track long term. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know I'm a big fan of using nutritional strategies that fit into your lifestyle and schedule that includes food that you enjoy and in alignment with your specific goals. So if you're short on time or you're just looking to get the time back from shopping, cooking, preparing and cleaning up after meals, then definitely go check the guys out. Clean Cut Meals helped me with all my nutritional needs in the lead up to running 250 kilometers to the Sahara Desert in April, and they'll be supporting me in my next challenge coming early next year. A little bit more on that at the very end of today's podcast. To get 20% off all first-time orders, go to cleancutmeals.ie and enter the podcast code BKF at the checkout. That's BKF at the checkout for 20% off all first-time orders. If you have any other questions, you can just fire the lads over an email too. Now, let's rock with this week's episode.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is a Q&A, so rounding out the month, there's been a range of different topics we've covered, so be sure to let me know on Instagram, tag me in your story, or hit me up on DM, or leave a review on iTunes if you're listening to this on an Apple device. Let me know what you thought. We went a little bit in all directions this month, so a mixture of Q&As, a mixture of interviews, and last week's then the episode dealing with mental health, which was a solo episode, and those ones are a little bit more difficult to come out with just because the topics are so harsh, but hopefully you got a lot of value from that. I know last month's how to deal with negative people has still been getting ridiculous downloads this month, so I hope that is providing you with a lot of value. But be sure to let me know what your favorite content of the podcast is, because I base it all off feedback. I'm not attached to the topics, the interviews, the Q&As. I literally just put out what people want to hear. So be sure to let me know, because it's all driven by your feedback on what you like. I know people like the Q&As because they're random, which I'll get into today. A little bit of everything covered. And there's timestamps on the website and on Instagram as well, so you can literally jump straight to your question. I know a lot of you listen to it straight through, but it's applicable if you're tagging people or sending them to a question. You can just tag them on Instagram and be like, check out question 3 or 4, and the timestamp is there. So hopefully you're enjoying this month's mixture of everything, but be sure to let me know. Today is a Q&A. I've taken questions from Instagram, Brian_Keane_fitness, and the website, briankeanefitness.com. So if you're reading my blog on the website, I've been putting up more written content recently, and in the contact section of the website, there's a place where you can send in questions for the podcast. I can't get to all of them just because of the influx, but I try and pick either some at complete random or ones I think would provide the most value for people listening, so you can send it in on there as well. So without further ado, we'll get into today's Q&A. Okay, first question comes in from Michael Glynn 123 on Instagram. What would be your top exercises for losing belly fat as fast as possible? So, long-term listeners of the podcast know this isn't going to be a one-word answer. And you probably know the direction I'm going to go with this if you've been subscribed or listening for a while. I will talk my top exercises that I like for burning belly fat. And I do actually have exercises that are my particular favorite if I'm trying to get my body fat down, particularly back when body composition was a primary goal as opposed to function and performance, which are my primary goals right now. And getting body fat down through exercise, yes, there are exercises that can help you burn more calories and can potentially help. But the truth is, nothing will do that if your nutrition isn't on point. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're following a training program that's very, very high intensity based is burning a lot of calories, you're tearing a lot of fibers down to elevate metabolism, and you don't change your nutrition, you still may get a slight change in body composition purely because you're loading your muscle with extra resistance. You're probably elevating your metabolism slightly. It happens to a lot of CrossFitters. CrossFit's a really good example of this, where when someone joins CrossFit first, and in most CrossFit boxes, they don't really do anything with your nutrition, and then you kind of just jump to paleo. Not in all cases, but in a lot. I'm using majority rules here. But people's body composition will change because the workouts are so hard, particularly the Metcons. Like, some of the metabolic conditioning workouts that they do in CrossFit are really, really difficult. They're very army style, high intensity body weight, and maxing out your heart rate as physically hard as you can go on a lot of exercises. So people's body composition can change without actually touching their nutrition. So you will hear people saying you can't out train a bad diet, and generally that's pretty good advice, but it's not necessarily true advice, or it's not necessarily fact, because there are people who can out train a bad diet if they're training really, really hard, or they've got a genetic makeup that allows them to look a certain way by training hard. You can potentially lose belly fat or lose body fat by training very, very difficult, by training very, at a very, very high intensity. It just makes it significantly more difficult, and it's not the ideal way to do it, and it's probably not the best way to do it. It's kind of similar to when somebody asks, should I do a keto diet to lose body fat? It's like, yes, you could lose body fat by going keto, definitely. But is it the easiest way to lose body fat? Probably not, just because of the restrictive nature of the nutritional strategy. Doing the high intensity exercises or top exercises for losing body fat is the same. It could help, and it might put you into a deficit enough that you can lose some body fat or belly fat, but it's not going to be the most effective way of doing it. So the first thing you need to get right if you're losing belly fat is an overall reduction in body fat. So what happens with a lot of people that have belly fat and they're lean, relatively lean everywhere else, you get what's built up of people call stubborn body fat. It's called stubborn body fat for a reason. It's stubborn, meaning that it's the last bit of body fat to go. So you may be getting leaner in your arms, you may be getting leaner in your legs, you may be getting leaner all over your body, but you're still holding on to that belly fat. That's because it's a stubborn buildup of fat. Some cases it can be a buildup of different visceral fat over the organs, and then subcutaneous fat. So there's two types of fat in your stomach. Generally, you've got your subcutaneous fat, which is the fat you can pull at and you can see, and then you've got your visceral fat, which is fat over your organs. And what can happen is there can be too much of a buildup of visceral fat for people. And again, this can be lifestyle, nutrition based. If you've been eating a lot of poor food choices over several years, you can get that buildup of visceral fat, and it just makes it more difficult to get that belly fat down. It's one of the reasons that I don't eat fast food. It's one of the reasons in my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, I spoke about trans fatty acids, about when you eat things like hydrogenated oils or fast food, they're loaded with trans fatty acids, and trans is the Latin for opposite side. If you see the chemical makeup of a fatty acid, it's got its hydrogen ions, and those hydrogen ions are on the opposite side in a trans fatty acid. So what happens when your body consumes that food is it panics, it doesn't understand what it's consuming, and it shuttles it into fat stores because it keeps it away from vital organs. Your body's job isn't to keep you lean. Your body's job isn't to build muscle. Your body's job isn't even to make sure you perform at an optimal level. Your body's job is to keep you alive. So when you eat foods that your body doesn't recognize, like a trans fatty acid, because of the opposite side chemical or the hydrogen ion, your body shuttles it into fat stores because that's where it's safe. You can put all those chemical toxins into fat, and it keeps your vital organs safe. Again, it's the death by a thousand cuts. It will negatively affect you over time because that buildup of fat has been shown to have all sorts of potential health issues down the line. But initially, right there and then, it keeps you safe. So that buildup over time can add to your belly fat, because obviously a lot of fat pockets around your stomach, your lower back, that region. And patience can be a really, really important aspect for getting belly fat down, because it can be frustrating. And here's where knowledge is key for staying on track long term. It's what I try and do with people in my programs. And when you understand that because if you're getting leaner everywhere, you're doing the right thing, and it's only a matter of time before your body starts to take that belly fat. So if you're following a nutritional strategy that has you in a deficit, you're following a good training program that's elevating your metabolism, elevating your heart rate, and your body composition is changing, you're getting leaner in your arms, you're getting leaner in your legs, you're getting leaner throughout your body, but your belly fat still isn't shifting, it's only a matter of time because your body has to take that fat from somewhere. So provided that you're consistently stimulating and doing muscle confusion in your training, so for example, in my top 50 program, which is the best example of a complete spike midway through the program, on week 4, there's a change up of the program completely. Everyone moves up a program level and the advanced trainers add in finishers instead of cardio. That's to ensure that there's no metabolic breakdown or no metabolic stalling where people's metabolism stall by getting used to a certain program. You realistically get 6 to 8 weeks before you need to do this. I tend to add it in earlier just to make sure that it doesn't happen in anyone in the general population that's coming through that program. So the reason for that is to keep everything ticking over so you don't plateau at any stage. So provided that your body composition is changing and you're not plateauing, it's only a matter of time before you take that belly fat. Now, the other question on the other side of it is, if you're not getting your body composition to change elsewhere, it's a sign and direct feedback that there's something off in your nutrition or your training. So if you've got your belly fat but you're not getting leaner anywhere else, that's a sign there's something wrong. You have direct feedback that either your nutritional strategy is wrong or your training program is incorrect or both aren't in alignment with your goals. So once you get aware with that, you can design around it. I always say to people I'm working with, I don't care what the problem is. You know, if you've got chocolate cravings or you're a former binge eater, I don't care what the problem is, but a lack of identification of the problem is a problem. So if you're having these self-sabotage or you're having this setback and you can't identify it because you're either fooling yourself or you don't want to share it or you feel insecure about sharing it, which is really important to open up that space as a trainer with someone, and you're able to share that, you can put plans in place to fix it. So problems as such don't really matter, but a lack of identification of an actual problem can really set people back. So understanding that if you're not responding at all, there's something off with your nutrition, there's something off with your training, and you need to fix it. In terms of top exercises then, anything that requires multi-joint movements and requires lots of muscle recruitment is always going to be the most optimal for not necessarily losing body fat, because you can't spot reduce. You can't say, right, I want to target that area and lose body fat from that region. Your body will take it from everywhere. And any exercise that allows you to burn a lot of calories is always going to be the best for losing body fat or belly fat or just fat in general, because you're burning more calories performing a certain movement. This is why building your training program around compound lifts is so effective, because when you do a compound lift, your squat, your deadlift, your bench press, your military press, your rows, you're recruiting a lot of different muscle groups to move that weight. And if you're working for tension and you're working for resistance on the muscle, so for example, I like 2-1-2 as a tempo, so 2 seconds up, 1 second pause and squeeze, 2 second lowering, or flipping that depending on the movement pattern, you know, 2 second lowering, 1 second pause, 2 second raising. And what that does is it recruits a lot of different muscles. It creates tension on the muscle, so it can increase the amount of tears that you have, which can elevate your metabolism, which can mean your body burns more calories throughout the day. So when you do that and you're burning more calories in your workout, you can potentially lose body fat faster. That's why things like isolation movements, as good as they are for shaping muscle and giving you fine tuning, they shouldn't be your foundation of a program, unless you're obviously a high level bodybuilder or bikini girl who's trying to focus in on bringing up the inside head of their bicep, or, you know, the bringing up the split in their hamstrings. Then the isolations can work great, but for the majority of people, they shouldn't be the base of your foundation of your training program. And to be honest, they're not the foundation of even high level bodybuilders or bikini girls in most cases. They still use the foundation pyramids of squat, bench, press, and rows, and then they isolate at the end of exercises or at the end of workouts when they're more fatigued and tired. The reason for this is that isolations don't burn that many calories. You're working a muscle in isolation. Your bicep curl, your dumbbell fly, they're working in isolation. You're only working your pectorals. You're only working your biceps. So you're not going to burn as many calories. When you're working a squat, you're using your quads. You're using your hamstrings. You're using your glutes. You're using your core for stabilization. There's so many muscles engaged and it's harder for your body. And one rule of thumb, the harder the move, probably the more calories you're burning. Not always in most cases, but it's a general good rule to work from. Like if I gave you a choice between a barbell squat with perfect form, 2-1-2 tempo, or I gave you a choice between a bicep curl, you're going to pick a bicep curl if you're feeling tired and weak because it's a lot easier to perform than a perfectly executed squat. So those movements are best. If I had to pick one exercise for losing body fat as fast as possible, and fast as possible is a very, very dangerous mindset because anything you do fast, you're going to lose fast. So I love the old Chinese proverb that the wall that goes up quickly comes down quickly. And that's what happens when you lose body fat. That's why there's multi-billion dollar companies built on fad diets or built on juice or bar diets because they can sell you the quick fix silver bullet that will get you to lose body fat quite quickly, but they don't tell you all the stuff out the other side. Your downregulation of ghrelin, your downregulation of leptin, your hunger and satiation hormones. They don't tell you about the rebound out the other side. That you start at 50 kilos, you get down to 45 kilos when you're eating 600 calories of a bar every day, and then you end up back at 52 kilos and you're now 2 kilos heavier than you were when you started. That's the rebound that's very, very common in that circle. And they don't tell you that, but selling a quick fix makes a lot of money. It's easy. We want to believe it. We want to believe you can get 6-minute abs. We want to believe you can lose 2 stone in 2 weeks. We want to believe you can make 6 figures in 6 weeks if you build this back funnel for your business. We want to believe these things. But we really, if you take a step back, we know they're not true, because anything in life worth getting always takes a little bit of effort. And you can definitely slow down your learning curve by working with a trainer or working with an online coach or working with someone experienced in that area. And I'm a huge fan of cutting your learning curve. It's why I work with business coaches. It's why I work with different people in different areas of my life that I need to improve on, because they keep you accountable, they cut your learning curve, and they allow you to see things that you may not be able to see. There's a reason we can't smell our own breaths. Like when you've got something wrong in your nutrition or your fitness, it's up to your trainer to be able to spot that. If you've got something wrong with your relationships, your relationship coach can spot that. When you've got something wrong with your business or your accounts, your business coach can spot that. Because you don't necessarily see it all the time, because we're not as rational when it comes to ourselves. So that would be my advice, is make sure you get everything lined up with your nutrition, high compound movements, high intensity movements that are going to burn a lot of calories. And if I had to pick one top exercise, it would be a barbell thruster, which is actually a combination of a front squat with an overhead military shoulder press. And their moves are absolutely brutal, because you're nearly working everything, with your exception of your chest, which is getting slightly extended at the top. Every other muscle group has been recruited there when you're doing a barbell thruster. If I'm in a hotel where I'm traveling and there's nothing else but a barbell or dumbbells in the hotel gym, I'll do 100 reps on barbell thrusters, and then I'll do a 2-kilometer run, and that's my whole workout done, because it keeps the intensity high. It works nearly everything in terms of muscle groups on your body, and you can work it to an intensity level that gets your heart rate up. So if fat loss is your goal, you want to elevate your heart rate. That's going to allow you to burn more calories during the actual workout. And then creating resistance on the muscle allows you to tear more fibers, which can elevate your metabolism, so you burn more calories while you rest. So you're hitting it from a 2-pronged approach for losing body fat. So that's what I would do. I would reframe the lose as fast as possible. I would cut that vocabulary out of your wording forever. I think that is the worst. There's a lot of self-sabotaging ways we can think, but adding the word as fast as possible is one that's going to set you back continuously. How you do anything is how you do everything. And as soon as you come at something, how can I do this as fast as possible? And one simple reframe with the power of words is, how can I do this as effectively as possible, is a powerful reframe for that. It's not the same thing. As fast as possible is just getting it done. if I ask you how can you get from Galway to Dublin or London to Birmingham as fast as possible, you put your floor, your peg down on the floor of the car and you just go as fast as possible. But if you hit something, you're going to go off the road and probably kill yourself. How do I get there as effectively as possible is a very different question. Getting there effectively is, well, I go to the speed limit, I go as fast as I can in places, I'll slow down when I need to, and I'll make sure I keep the car on the road and I get there in one piece. That's the same thing with fitness. Changing as fast as possible to as effective as possible will allow you to do it, get to the shape you want, get your body fat or belly fat down, and then allow you to keep it long term. That's a very effective way of thinking towards most things as opposed to doing it as fast as possible. So hopefully that helps Michael and anybody else in a similar situation. Okay, next question comes in from Deirdre O'Hare. I'm trying to set up a podcast in a totally different field, weddings, and need tips help to get started. So I answered earlier this month, about a podcast launch. So I'm not going to get into how to launch a podcast. So you can go back on episode, which episode is that? I'm going to look at it here. You can go back on episode 169. Which was about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and I talked about how to get a podcast launched. So effectively, the not waiting for all the lights to go green and spending money on equipment before you've actually done any episodes to see if you've tested it and see if people want it. So I'm going to be quite quick with this one. So my best piece of advice for getting the podcast started is one, understanding that podcasts probably haven't peaked just yet. And if you're running a business, it's very important to understand where people's attention is. And I love the Wayne Gretzky quote that don't go to where the puck is, go to where the puck is going. And it's very applicable to podcasts and business. Audio is a very, very powerful space right now. If you're familiar with Alexa skills or the other HomePods, voice is a very, very powerful avenue and channel right now that is only being expanded on. And again, always be aware and never attached to the way things may go. But when you start to see some of the home devices being linked up with the cars, where your Alexa skill is going to be linked up with your car, where you can be driving home from work and turn on your Alexa in the car and say, all right, Alexa, open my door at 5:05, turn on the TV and record, you know, Love Island for me, and put on the heat I want to have it, and put on the immersion I want to have a shower at, you know, 6:15. You'll be able to do that from your car. That's voice space, and that will overlap with podcasts. So to give you a background on how important the audio space is right now, it's a space that if you run a business or you're trying to land grab in terms of building up a personal brand, I would definitely advise looking into it and getting started in it. Podcast is something that setting up, as I mentioned in the last episode, just getting it out there and testing it to see if it's what people want. My biggest tips with someone going into a wedding space or a space that's outside of fitness or health, which is my realm, or personal relationships or health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. I try and break the podcast into those four quadrants because they're the ones that I'm able to speak on personally. And a lot of it is testing it to see. There's a reason that I ask on podcasts, I ask you listening, what do you want to hear? Do you want to hear more topics? Do you want to hear more Q&As? Do you want to hear more interviews? Because I'm basing it off feedback. All my content is user-generated feedback, because my end goal, my North Star, is trying to help as many people as I can. Like, I have that. I'm very fortunate with the way that I can articulate ideas, and I'm aware of my circle of competence in fitness and nutrition, that space. That's what I've done most of my life, that I'm able to support people and serve people and help them. I work with people directly. So people that want to work with me directly and tailor things to them, that's why I have programs. For everyone that's outside of that, that's why I create all the free content or the podcasts or the videos, etc., to try and help and serve those people. So what I would advise is, when you set up a podcast, one, just get it out there and see if people are interested in it, because you may end up doing it and realize that, oh, I'm actually terrible on audio, or else I don't enjoy it and you don't do it anymore. But once you get it out there, I would start using user-generated content off people. People I work with coming through my business programs, one of the things I'll tell them is to use your audience as feedback, particularly when you're trying to build up a business or a personal brand, because one of the mistakes a lot of people make is they copy what other people are doing. And I made this mistake myself. When I was putting out videos first, probably 4 years ago, I would see what other popular people were doing and I would copy their video topics and then I'd make a video on it myself. That's not a terrible idea, but it's also not a great idea because that may not be what your audience is interested in. If you've got 70, 80% of 40-year-old women who are looking to get married, putting out a video on, you know, something that's completely irrelevant to that topic isn't going to support you and help you. So what I would advise is use your audience to give you feedback. It doesn't matter if you're trying to build a business or a personal brand, you're better off to have 1,000 people who follow you, who know who you are, who believe the words you're saying and are potential customers or potential people you can serve and help, than having 100,000 people who follow you because you're sexy. So when you get your podcast out there, start using your audience to give you feedback on what direction to go. One of the reasons people get confused about content and making it is, one, obviously the fear of what people will say, which you get over very quickly if you just start putting content out there. But the other side of it is, and by the way, I felt that as well. Everybody feels that in the beginning. That's literally everybody that puts out videos or content or podcasts at the beginning are nervous about what people will say, but that dissipates pretty quickly. So just on a side note, but one of the reasons people can lack for content ideas is not listening to what their audience are saying. If one person gives you a DM or a comment on a photo that's asking a question, that's potential content. So if somebody asks you a question on a wedding dress in your DMs on Instagram, you know that that's going to be a podcast question for your next podcast. Or somebody asks you about how do I lose weight to fit into this wedding dress, you're like, okay, I'll link a blog post from Brian Keane Fitness, or I'll link a blog post from whoever. And you're supporting your audience that way. And then you're using them to drive content, and you're using your that content to drive more awareness that you're the person that can help this particular avatar, this particular audience. So when you do that, a podcast is just a place where there's people's attention. That's all it is. It's just a platform right now where people have the attention. Right now, you're listening to this in your car. You're listening to this on a commute. You're listening to this in the gym. You're listening to this while you're prepping your meals. You're listening to it passively. The only thing I have right now is your attention. That's why I'm so grateful for it, because you could be doing other things. Even though you may be doing something else, you're still listening to the podcast. That attention shifts. That attention was in Facebook several years ago. That attention was in Snapchat for a period of time. Then that attention starting to move to Instagram and into podcast realms. It moves. So all podcasts do is you give you right now an area where people are focused on and have the attention. Then it's up to you to put out valuable content to the people listening. When you're able to have a value exchange, which is what I try and do on the podcast, is you're giving me your time, I'm trying to give you knowledge or help or feedback in a certain area that can potentially move your life forward. It's a value exchange. So when you do that, you can build up a podcast pretty quickly. So that's what I would advise right now, regardless of your realm, whether it's weddings, whether it's fitness, whether it's health. If you're looking to build a personal brand or you're looking to build your business, the attention right now is in audio, and it's probably not going to go away, because when things like Alexa skills become mainstream, and they will become mainstream, when people said once upon a time, oh, I'll never get a smartphone, I can't work those, it will be mainstream. It'll probably be in every single house. And again, I'm talking 18 months, 24 months, but it will. And when that happens, podcasts are only going to get bigger because they're building on the audio platform. So I would get on it now because they haven't peaked, if you're to ask my personal opinion. It's why I've got some of my people in my business program starting podcasts, because I think it's still a land grab right now. But after that, it's using your users, using your audience, using the people following you to generate content so you can help and serve them. They may lead to potential leads for your business, and you can grow and scale your business faster that way. But you also serve that community and become an authority in that realm, which again has its other benefits if you want to go down the influencer route, or you want to get paid to speak, or you want to do appearances in places, or you want to write a book, which again helps serve that audience. There's lots of different areas you can go. Business isn't one dimensional where you go this way and this is how you build it. You design a service or a product and you sell it. It's multi-dimensional. It's just deciding what way you want to work, and if you want multiple revenue streams or you want to narrow down on one, that's very much down to what business decision path you decide to take. So hopefully that helps. Anybody else that's in that thought process of potentially starting a podcast. Okay, next one. Three-pronged question on coffee. So this is sent in three ways. So I'm just going to go bang, one, two, three, and answer it as best I can. So this comes in from Podge Collins on Instagram. Does going off coffee enhance the caffeine boost received? Yes, 100%. You build up a caffeine tolerance from drinking too much. So caffeine is just an active ingredient in coffee. And we build up a tolerance to caffeine pretty quickly. For anyone that drinks coffee or stimulated drinks or pre-workouts, you can attest to this, because the first time you ever took a cup of coffee or a stimulated drink, it probably gave you a lot of energy and a lot of brain cognition, because it switches on your brain. It's why you can get super focused with caffeine. It can also reduce your or improve your lactic acid threshold, so you can train harder if you're working out. It's why a lot of athletes take it. It's actually one of the supplements I use with a lot of my GEA players, just because you can manipulate the tolerance depending on different foods they're consuming, etc. But yes, it going off it can enhance the boost that it gives you. I give up caffeine, and I spoke about this on the 12 Life Experiments That Stuck episode. I gave up caffeine twice a week, and sometimes three times a week, even though I don't always get a third day in where I don't take any caffeine. And that's the reason, is to keep my tolerance high. So normally on a Saturday or Sunday, I don't do any work at the weekends. And sometimes on a Friday, if I don't have a lot of cognitively demanding tasks, won't take caffeine on those days to keep the tolerance high. And then when I take it on a Monday, for example, I have a cup of green tea beside me and I just finished a small cup of coffee while I'm recording this podcast, is because it allows me to get that benefit of the caffeine when I actually do need to be cognitively switched on, or I do need to be physically switched on. So for example, when I ran Marathon de Sabla, the 250-kilometer race to the Sahara, I didn't take any caffeine for 2 weeks leading up to Morocco, flying out there, and I didn't take any caffeine until the long day in Morocco or in the Sahara, so that I would get the benefit of caffeine, and it worked a treat. It was a great idea in hindsight. So I hadn't taken any caffeine for those 2 weeks, and then I did the marathon on Monday, marathon on Tuesday, marathon on Wednesday, and then a double on Thursday, Friday, the double was on Wednesday, and I took caffeine about halfway through the double. So about 40 kilometers in, I started taking caffeine because we were running through the night. It was took me 24 hours to do the 86 kilometers through the Sahara, and it kept me awake and it gave me a mental edge. I actually made really good time on that day because I hadn't taken any caffeine for 2 weeks. I hadn't taken it for the first two marathons or first three marathons. And then I took it on day four and my body got a hit from it. So it definitely works and is a really good way to manipulate the different chemicals. Caffeine is a drug, and to use different chemicals, again, it's a legal drug, but it's still a drug. Anything that changes your body's chemistry is a drug, but a very effective one. So yes, 100%. It's one of the reasons that I go off it, so that I get that boost when I do take it. Part two, do I build a tolerance to caffeine by drinking coffee daily? Yes, if you do take it every day, similar to what I said, you'll build up a tolerance to it and you just won't get the effects of it. A catch 22 that comes with coffee is you build up a liking for the taste. And again, I can't speak for anybody else, but I love the taste of coffee. And that's a dangerous game, because when you're drinking it for taste, you're still getting all the caffeine that comes with it. And when you really, really enjoy actually drinking it, it makes it easy to start drinking one, two, three cups a day because you're like, oh, I'm dying for a cup of coffee. So yeah, you do build up a tolerance to it. My advice is, if you're using it for performance enhancing aspects of your life, regardless of whether it's training or, you know, studying or work, where you need to be switched on cognitively, I would limit it a couple of days a week so you get the benefit. And third, from my limited knowledge of coffee and caffeine, I understand coffee is a diuretic. Would this lead to dehydration and would it affect performance? And to follow on from that, why are caffeine tablets the best methods to get a caffeine kick? So yes, coffee is a diuretic, which means it pulls water out of your body, and yes, can potentially dehydrate you. This generally isn't going to be an issue if you're drinking enough water. What can happen, and where coffee can be not so much dangerous, but it can put a lot of extra pressure on your kidneys, is if you're already dehydrated and then you drink coffee, because it's only going to dehydrate you more. But if you're drinking coffee and you're drinking 2, 3, 4 liters of water a day, it's very unlikely it's going to have any negative effect on dehydration. But just be aware, it can do that. And what happens to a lot of people if they take coffee or caffeine pills, similar to creatine, because creatine pulls water underneath your muscle, is dehydration can feels horrible, but you'll get signs first. First, you'll get like muscular cramps, or you'll get constipated because you're dehydrated. And then you'll probably start to get headaches, which tends to be the next sign of dehydration. But all very, very easy to manage by just staying on top of your water. And then to follow on, caffeine tablets aren't necessarily the best. It's just that they're the most controlled. So when you drink a cup of coffee that you've made yourself, or you go into a shop, you may not be getting the amount of caffeine that you can control that you would get from a supplement. So sometimes if you get a cup of coffee, it may be 100 micrograms of caffeine in it. Sometimes it might be 200, depending on who made the cup, depending on how it's been made that day. It's harder to control it, where when you're taking a supplement that's got 200 mcgs of caffeine, you can control that. You know, every time I take 2 capsules, I'm getting 200 mcgs. If I need to go up, I can go up to 3 capsules. If I need to come down, I can go to 1. It's a lot more controllable. So it's not that it's better, it's just you can control it better. And if you're trying and worried about your tolerance, and you're trying to test out your tolerance, you can figure it out a lot more effectively than, well, I get switched on with a cup of coffee, because that cup of coffee may be different depending on what shop you bought it in, depending on what coffee shop you were in, and depending on if you made it yourself. It all makes it harder to control if you're trying to assess tolerance. So that's probably the reason. I wouldn't say it's necessarily better, I just think it's more controllable. So hopefully that helps. And I know a lot of you listening are fans of coffee or caffeine or stimulated drinks or pre-workouts. And I've spoken on caffeine in the past, central nervous system fatigue, etc., that are all things to look out for. But hopefully that will help in terms of baseline knowledge on tolerance, what I do, and how to get the best from it. Okay, next question. I always make bad decisions. I go after the wrong guys, say the wrong things, and let my emotions take control. Is there any advice you would offer? Okay, so I'm probably well qualified to speak on this because I've had to cultivate being more patient and not being as impulsive when making decisions. My general nature and my actual makeup, if I was left to my own devices, would be to be very impulsive in nature. And I always make bad decisions when I'm impulsive. And it was a case of the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. I would continuously make emotional or unrational decisions based out of the way I was feeling as opposed to the actual circumstance. And it would allow and lent itself to me making a lot of bad decisions. None that I truly regret long term, but decisions that hurt people or hurt myself or just put unnecessary stress on relationships or unnecessary stress in my life in general, purely through a fact of not stepping back and seeing the forest amongst the trees. So I've had to cultivate patience and not be as impulsive. One thing that allowed me to understand this better was this great book by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky called Thinking Fast and Slow. And they speak about your system one and system two. Your system one is your fast, impulsive, automatic thoughts. Your system two is your slow, reflective, what's actually going on in a certain situation. It's your rational thought. And that book helped me a lot. It's like an operational manual for your brain. It can be a difficult read. It took me 3 attempts to read it just because I don't think I was in the place to accept the information in it. And I also don't think I had the baseline knowledge to understand it the first 2 times. And then as I start to understand a little bit more about human misjudgment and some of the psychological tendencies that we have, that book just seemed to move my knowledge from a 9 to a 10 in terms of an operational manual for my own brain. And making bad decisions comes down to a couple of things. One is a network of people that are around you and listening to advice from other people. And one of the things I've spoken about on the podcast in the past is if you wouldn't switch positions with the person, why are you listening to their advice? And that isn't always necessarily the best advice, because sometimes somebody could be, you know, single, for example. They're not in a relationship for the last 10 years, but they're very objective and outside of, say, your romantic relationship, it can offer quite good advice on it, and they're not in a relationship by choice. Normally when I say that, I mean people that are on the opposite end of the spectrum. So if you have a friend who's miserable and hates their boyfriend or girlfriend and is always giving out about them, why are you taking relationship advice from that person? And we do fucking take it from them. If you're talking to someone who's out of shape or overweight and doesn't look after themselves, and they're like, ah, you don't need to go to the gym, you'll be fine, that you're taking advice from somebody who not only you wouldn't switch places with, but are on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of what you do actually want. That's fucking ludicrous. So what I would advise is making sure that your circle or the people that you're listening to and taking advice from are either people you'd switch positions from, or people you trust, or who are people who have your best interest at heart. Because sometimes we make decisions based off what our friends say or based off what our family say, and we go after the wrong things. And it was as simple as actually realizing that what they're trying to help with isn't going to support you in any way, shape, or form, because they haven't figured out their own fucking life. And yet we do it. I see it all the time. The only thing that changes is names, where people are like, well, Joan said that Peter's a dickhead and that I shouldn't be with him. I'm like, Joan is fucking miserable. Why are you listening to Joan? And you got to take some ownership of your own relationship and realize that everything you do is your own decision that you've made. It's a choice that you've made. And going after the wrong guys or going after the wrong girls is a definition of insanity if you're doing the same fucking thing over and over again, because you have physical feedback and there'll be certain characteristics and certain traits that people have that you should be able to recognize now, because it's fucking happened over and over again. If you're going after a guy who is the player, that's always, you know, got a couple of girls on the line or on his phone, and he jumps between you and a couple of other girls, you'll start to see those personality traits come out, and you should be able to spot it on a first date pretty quickly. Sometimes you'll be tricked, but there's an old saying and a proverb and a life philosophy that I live by, that if one person calls you a horse, it's on them. If two people call you a horse, it's a conspiracy. But if three people call you a horse, it's time to get some saddle and some hay. When you make bad decisions and you go after the wrong guys continuously or say the wrong thing or let your emotions take control, it's on you, and you need to change what the way you're seeing it and the things you put into your mind. Making those bad decisions can come down to taking advice from people who aren't really supportive in what they're telling you. If you've got a bad network of friends, when I say bad, I mean unsupportive. They may be the nicest people in the world, but they give terrible advice. You need to be able to differentiate, right, I'm not going to ask that person about advice on relationships. They don't know fucking anything. That I've got friends that I would never ask fitness advice from, and I've got people who I would jump to when I've got a business decision to make, because they're very, very rational and objective, and the way they can see things, they can offer a fresh perspective. You need to know who those people are, because if you can't make those decisions yourself, and none of us can make every decision ourselves, that's why our inner circle and the people you spend the most time with are very, very important and valuable. And when you're able to separate the emotion from the rational decision, it makes it significantly easier to make those decisions. So what I would do, and something that I that helped me a lot with making bad decisions and going after the wrong people or just basically letting emotions take control, is one, I stop and pause when I feel myself welling up with emotion, and I ask myself the question, am I being emotional right now or am I being rational right now? And sometimes that helps me, because it allows me to disconnect from the emotions of the situation. And it's hard sometimes when you're in the middle of it, but a lot of the time, if you can take yourself out of a situation and ask yourself, well, what advice would I offer myself right now? And if I had a euro or a dollar or a pound for every time somebody was like, well, I always give great advice, but I just can't take it myself. If you can start doing that, that becomes a superpower, where you take yourself out of a situation and go, okay, being objective right now, what advice would I offer myself? If you see a guy that you're like, he reminds me of the last three guys I was seeing, or she reminds me of the last three girls I was seeing, and that went terrible, you've got direct feedback. If you end up climbing that ladder, you're climbing the ladder against the wrong wall. And if you end up, if you don't deal with the problem when it was small enough to be dealt with, you deserve to deal with the fuck up that comes from it. And that thought process serves me well, because every time I'm like, oh, I might just see where this goes, or I'll see where this relationship goes, or I'll see where this business decision goes, or I'll see where this life choice goes. I know myself, if my internal compass is pointing in a different direction and my insides are like, no, this doesn't feel right, and I still do it, and I didn't deal with it when it was small enough to be dealt with, I deserve to deal with the fuck up that comes from not having dealt with it. That can make you very rational very, very quickly, because you understand that it's very hard to get out of something that you jump into. Whereas if you put a foot into it and just test it out and see, and you start having certain criteria that you can come up against, for example, your non-negotiables, and I've spoken about this in previous podcasts, when you have non-negotiables for a relationship, for example, that, right, I need somebody that's kind. I need somebody that I'm physically attracted to. I need somebody who I can speak and have those long conversations with. I need somebody who can give me a lot of space because I'm very self-independent and actually don't like people being on top of me. If you don't know what you want, you'll take whatever you get. So it's very, very important to have those non-negotiables, because then you have a checklist. And when you have a mental checklist of what it is that you want, you have some chance of hitting that. If you don't have a mental checklist, or you don't have a target that you're trying to hit in terms of a relationship, I'll use that as the context because I think that's mainly what the question was. When you don't have a checklist, you're going to take whatever you get, and then you're going to make the same decisions because you're going to fall into the habits that you've always done. And we are our habits, and it's very, very difficult to break them. And we don't choose our future. You choose your habits, and your habits decide your future. You're going to fall into what you've automatically done. And if nothing changes, nothing changes. So you need to change the checklist you have when going for a relationship. You need to change your ability to distance yourself or disconnect emotionally from the rationality of a situation. That's something that has helped me more than anything. I live by the Donald Trump quote, and again, politics aren't a strong suit of me. I literally don't care, left wing, right wing. But one of my favorite quotes from Donald Trump was, you can always tell someone to go fuck themselves tomorrow. That's great advice. It's the heightened version of sleep in it and see how you feel. Because a lot of the times when you're making decisions, if you're still hot, and when I say hot, I mean emotionally attached to the situation, when you sleep on it the next day, it tends to take away a lot of the fuel from the fire, and you are normally a lot more rational. That's why one of the advices, and I had a girl recently who was asking me, she made an absolute mess of a relationship in terms of like borderline restraining order from the guy. And I was telling her, she was like, I want to write him a letter, or I want to write him an email. One thing that can help a lot is writing an email or writing out a letter about to somebody else that you want to give out to or want to say sorry to that you really shouldn't send. It can be very cathartic, but write it and don't send it, or write it and put it in your drafts and send it tomorrow. If you're telling someone to go fuck themselves, or you're telling somebody, you know, spraying your love for your life, someone that you love them and you only met them 3 days ago, you're better off to sleep on those decisions, because they're emotionally driven decisions. They're not rational decisions. By all means, if you still feel the same way in the morning, send the message or send the email or send the text. But sleeping on it can give you a lot more rational perspective. It can also help disconnect you a little bit from the situation. If you have a gut feeling on somebody that this guy doesn't feel right or this girl doesn't feel right, and you sleep in it and you still rationalize it the next morning, and you're like, okay, look, they don't tick any of the boxes, you know, they're not that kind, I don't think I can have a conversation with them, I'm not that physically attracted to them. Or maybe what's worse, you do have a couple of strong ticks where you're like, oh, they're really fucking sexy, but I can't hold a conversation with them. Then you got to make a rational call on what you want to do. You know, do you want to take the short-term fling option of something for a couple of months that you're like, well, they're really physically attractive, you know, I want to hook up with them, or I like being seen with them, or am I playing the long game because I actually do want something meaningful and deep long-term? That's a judgment call. There's no right or wrong with that. It's just what you're trying to achieve. As long as you're actions map to your ambition, it doesn't matter what it is you do. So the only thing I'll offer is don't fool yourself, and you're the easiest person to fool. Don't fool yourself into thinking that it's the external world, that it's the guys, that it's, you know, well, I just can't find the right guy, or I just can't find the right girl, because that's not true. That's a story you've made up in your head. It's not true. It's not the physical world, and it's not the reality. You're making bad decisions, or you're falling into bad habits. And when you own that, you can control it. And when you control it, you can change it. So the practical advice is separating the emotion from the rational decision. Outside of that, it's taking control of the habits and realizing that making bad decisions is a choice, or making bad decisions is a habit, and you need to go back to the source and change the habit, or you need to go back to the source and change the network of people that you talk to around certain topics, or you need to go back and get a little bit deeper and more self-aware on what it is that's making you, leading you to making these bad decisions. You can avoid a lot of that by having a checklist on what you want. As I said, when you know what you want, it's very easy to go and hit that target. It's very simple. It's not easy because you still have to put in the work, but it's very simple and straightforward. And it makes decisions easier. One of the things I speak about on the podcast is I break my life into the four quadrants: health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. And then I score those out of 10 every couple of weeks or every month to see what areas of my life I need to improve on. When you know what's important to you and you value the valuables, it makes it very easy to make decisions. One of the reasons that I don't get stressed about decision making is I know exactly where I want to be in the four quadrants, and every decision I make, every business opportunity I make, every choice that I make, if it doesn't move the needle forward in those four quadrants, my health, my wealth, my love, or my fulfillment, if it doesn't move the needle in those four quadrants, I just don't do it. It's very, very simple. My health, my physical health, my well-being, my mental health, my wealth, my bank account, my love, my relationships, romantically or personally or family relationships, and fulfillment, the thing that makes me jump out of bed every day and helping and providing and using the talents that I've been given to try and provide value to other people. They're the things that I score my life out of. And it makes it very easy to make decisions, because if somebody comes at me with a proposal and it doesn't lend or move the needle in any of those directions, I just say no. It makes it really easy. And one of the biggest pieces of advice I can offer if you're dealing with stress is learn how to say fucking no. Because we all want to be liked. It's an evolutionary trait that's in us from social groups of hunter-gatherers thousands of years ago, that we want to be accepted by the majority. And that's how we all are. It's all hardwired in our DNA. There's no way around it. You can just hijack your higher level thinking, and by putting yourself into exposed situations where you're putting your thoughts and ideas out there, it becomes easier and easier to say no. And then when you stop caring what other people think, which effectively is what fucks us up in all areas of life, because we're caring what people think, the decisions we make, the words we make, the car we have, the clothes we wear, everything we do, we care about what other people think, we care what our family think, we care what our friends think, we care what society thinks. And at the end of the day, a lot of the root of unhappiness comes down to either comparing yourself with other people, which comes down to fucking the fact that we're so hardwired to want everyone to like us. When you start to disconnect from that and realize that there are three or four people, maybe five if you're very, very lucky, whose opinion really do matter. You do want to care what they think about, because they're your loved ones, they're your family members, they're your kids, they're your mother, they're your father, they're your partner, they're whoever it is in your life. Their opinion matters. When you disconnect from the rest of the societal norms and the rest of what everyone else says, makes it very, very easy to make decisions, because you don't give a fuck about saying no. Because when you say no, it's not moving the needle in other areas of your life. And if you don't live life on your terms, you're going to live on everyone else's terms. That's my piece of advice for making bad decisions. This is someone, and I've came out the other side. On the high end of your mess becomes your message, because it was something that crippled my decision making for a long period of time because of impulse decisions and making decisions from emotion rather than rational vantage points. And it just moved the needle back in areas of my life. Not only did it not move it forward or keep it the same, it fucking moved me backwards. So learn how to say no. Very important tool. If it doesn't move the needle forward in the area of your life that's the most important to you, just don't do it. It makes it very easy. I spoke in the fitness mindset, making decisions in the mindset section, the 10 life rules, that I make everything by, it's either a hell yes or it's a no. If I make a decision on something, I'm all in with it. Or if I'm not, I just don't do it at all. Makes it a lot easier. It makes life a lot more simple, and it makes it your life significantly less stressful. Ask yourself, am I being emotional or am I being rational right now? You can always tell someone to go fuck themselves tomorrow. Sleep on it. Train. exercise, disconnect from it, go watch a movie. Don't make a decision when you're feeling hot. Don't make a decision when you're feeling heated or emotional, because you'll make bad decisions. You're not a fucking chimp. You don't need to use your primal instincts to make decisions, because they don't support anybody. Yes, they feel good. And there's a great quote by Tony Robbins who said it better, that you can be happy or you can be right. And that's a case in a lot of romantic decisions or emotional decisions that we make. You can be right and you can get your point across and be fiery and be like, yeah, well, I fucking showed him or I showed her. And then you got to do damage limitation or else damage repair in a relationship. But you got to be right. Or you can be rational and you can be happy and realize that if I react this way right now, it's probably not going to move that relationship further, even though I get to be right and I get the dopamine hit of having won an argument. But the truth is, it doesn't move the relationship further and it probably strained it. So ask yourself that. Take control of it. Own your decisions. Good, bad, or indifferent, own it. Every single decision you make, own it. When you do that, a lot of our anxiety in the world comes from a lack of control on situations. But something really weird happens when you take extreme ownership of everything. When you own all your feelings, when you own all your decisions, when you own all the good, all the bad, all the indifferent, you control it then, because you're choosing how you want to see it. And when you own it like that, it gives you back the control. And when you have the control, you feel significantly better, because it's your choice then. It's not the external world. It's not all the other bad guys that you're meeting. It's not all the shitty Tinder dates. It's none of that. It's you. You're making the decision. You need to own it. And when you do that, you can control it. And when you do that, you can change it. That's what will help you long term. My gut tells me, as someone that came out the side of increased impulsivity and been able to cultivate patience over the years. So hopefully that supports you. And anybody else, check out Daniel Kahneman's book, Thinking Fast and Slow. If you have a little bit of baseline psychology or a little bit of understanding of human misjudgment and psychological tendencies that we have, that book is a beautiful icing on the cake as an operational manual for how your brain works. One of my favorite books of all time. So I would definitely check that one out, and hopefully that helps. So, random one again today on the Q&As. I've got my next top 50 program starting, what are we in now? August. I think we're the end of August now. So, next month, September. Don't know the date just yet. But I have anyone that wants to work with me in my Facebook group that's looking to get in shape coming into the Christmas period. So, it'll be September, October, and then maintenance over November, December. Just send me an email. Brian@briankeenfitness.com. Just put top 50 in that. Again, normal rules, when it hits 50 people, I'm closing it off. And that will potentially be the last one. I may run another one before the Christmas, but it'll be the last one for the next few months anyway. So if you want to work with me, just send me an email or DM me on Instagram, but I'll probably send you to my email, so maybe just email me anyway, brian@briankeenfitness.com. Massive thank you for listening. Hope you all enjoyed today's episode, got loads of value, and catch you all next week. Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know, my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsor of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting on Medicare feelings. So stay tuned for that. And remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next time.